Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today is humility, and first I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, which sponsors this show, and she wrote 24 volumes of literature. And the main inspiration for the dialogue that you'll hear on this show comes from the works of Alice Bailey, as does the following thought. Humility is an adjusted sense of right proportion, a balanced point of view. Well, you know, this sounds as if humility is important to spiritual development, but let's face it, it's not much in vogue today, is it?
No. Both the times and our society, I think, work against the cultivation of humility. The present time is an age in which self-esteem is extremely emphasized, and that's probably healthy, building up a sense of one's worth as a human being, genuine self-esteem, and at the same time the capacity to esteem all others would be important in psychological well-being. But it's also a society, the American society, is one which I think is a society that kind of cultivates braggadocio, if that's the word, the desire to be the best, number one, the highest achiever. All of that is very American. We're the biggest, the best, the most powerful nation. And I think that filters down into messages that children get from a very early age. And yet, as our opening thought says or implies, humility is a vital characteristic for spiritual development. In fact, Proverbs, the book of Proverbs in the Bible, says that before honor is humility in terms of values. Before honor, before great achievement is humility. And why that should be is what we want to talk about today.
It's very important, particularly for when one's, as they say, steps on the path of discipleship, or even on the probationary path, as it's called, because it's probably the first time you begin to examine oneself or yourself and look at this quality of humility and see if it's something that, you know, stands in the way of advancement on the path.
It's interesting to go to the dictionary when one's talking about a particular term. Sometimes you learn a different slant on it. And I found it was kind of enlightening. We're told in the dictionary that the word humble has both Latin and Greek roots that mean the same as the earth, to be on the ground. Grounded, not proud or haughty, low in the sense of being grounded or well anchored, not in the sense of being degraded. And I thought that's interesting, to think of humility as being grounded with your feet on the ground, not flying too high, not trying to live above your class or your attainment, being realistic in your appraisal of yourself, both your flaws and your virtues. And more importantly, I think, as the opening thought says, having an adjusted sense of right proportion, which I think means being able to see yourself in terms of humanity as a whole. then you don't lose perspective. You see yourself for all your flaws and for all of your growing strengths in terms of what it means to be human and in the light or from the perspective of how all other human beings are progressing. Then you find a balanced perspective, don't you think?
Yes, it's very important to find that balance, because if you look at yourself, then you see tendencies towards pride, which on the one hand, or self-denigration or self-depreciation on the other hand. So it could go either way, and we've seen examples of that in some people where they're very prideful. And on the other hand, there are people that are engaged in much false humility, mm-hmm.
Deprecation or depreciation.
And but so one has to find a balance, a middle point. Like everything else along the path, it's finding that middle way, the middle point. And I think that's where the factor of the soul comes into play, because that's where one can find the middle point by looking at the situation, your life situation, as the soul sees it from that very objective point of view. Then you see the both extremes of pride or of self-deprecation, but the true way is somewhere right in the middle.
And of course, the soul is consciousness, which is one with all beings. There is no my soul and your soul in reality. There is only the soul in which we all live and breathe and have our being. So when you see yourself and all other selves as the soul, you are seeing as the individual it truly is, but without any recoiling from witnessing flaws and without any over congratulation at witnessing achievement, because it's all one humanity and we all help to contribute to the progression of humanity, and we all probably from time to time contribute to its limitations. So we need to be patient with ourselves and patient with all others. Like you say, humility is no good if it becomes a kind of an obsessive self-denigration. In fact, a philosopher named Fenelon said that it's mere self-love to be inconsolable at seeing one's imperfections. If you are so obsessed and so transfixed by the fact that you are a mere mortal human being with flaws as well as virtues, that becomes its own imprisoning infatuation. And in a way, it's a kind of a reverse pride. What? I have flaws? Oh my goodness, I give up. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense to be that self-pitying either.
No, and that kind of reaction is really kind of a slap in the face to someone else who has, say, given you a compliment, and you kind of throw it back at him and don't accept it graciously. Then it's kind of a slap at him. But so yes, one has to find that perfect balance somewhere in the middle, as we said. That third point of view, the point of view of the soul.
I think that this factor of balance is something that human beings struggle with every step of the endless way of spiritual progress, perhaps because the human kingdom is said to be governed by the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, which is the middle of the seven rays, and humanity is the middle kingdom in the progression of life on earth, from mineral, vegetable, animal to human, and on toward the higher kingdoms. We are constantly finding that divine mean, but in our experience as human beings, and humility is the attainment of that fine balance that sees one's divinity and one's humanity with the same pair of eyes, so to speak, and sees the divinity and the humanity in all others with an equally realistic appraisal. It's it's useless to go overboard in over appreciation of someone else's status or virtues, because they will inevitably let you down if you have overestimated them. That's not doing them any service. And it's equally wrong to see people through the lens that is so critical and so judgmental and holds them to such an impossibly high standard that they have no recourse except to fail the standard you've imposed upon them.
And it's as we said in the beginning, it's very important that if one is really serious about setting foot on the path and taking one's life into account and trying to reach for a higher spirit of perfection, then this is the time to do it. And it needs to develop that dispassionate attitude towards so much of what happens around you and the reactions of others and so forth.
Easier said than done.
Easier said than done, but one has to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and our topic for today is humility. And by the way, there are those who express interest in our organization, in Lucis Trust, and if you'd like a package of information, a general package of information, we'll be very happy to send it out to you. There's a lot of good literature in there. You'll also find the, isn't the Great Invocation, Sarah, isn't that
yes.
in the package too?
Mm-hmm.
But so many people like the prayer that Sarah says at the end of the show, the Great Invocation. A copy of that is in the general package of information, as well as a lot of other information about different sub-organizations and committees and interesting things that Lucis Trust is involved in. So if you'd like that general package of information, just give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. Once again, it's 1-866-695-8247. Easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866 New York Lucis. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S. Our website is www.lucistrust.org. And also you might want to call up to purchase books or copies of radio shows and many other reasons. Any information that you might want, you're welcome to give us a call. We're speaking about humility, and we'll continue that show. What did, when we think of the great spiritual leaders, Buddha, Christ, what was their viewpoint of humility?
Well, I was thinking earlier today about the example of the Christ washing the feet of his disciples, which is an action that I think has been interpreted in myriad ways, and it probably has deep spiritual significance. But I wonder if he was demonstrating not his own abject modesty. I think that's too easy an interpretation. He was, after all, both human and divine, and well aware of it. But I think by washing the feet of his disciples, he was demonstrating a shared consciousness with them, a capacity to serve their needs regardless of what his own spiritual attainment might be. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think that's right. It's because it reminds me of the it's in the writings of the Alice Bailey books. It says true humility is based on fact, on vision, and on time pressures. And I think Christ probably understood all of that. He understood the vision.
I'm not sure I did on
the fact of where he stood on the path. He knew exactly where he stood and what his responsibilities were.
I mean, after all, he said, "I am the light of the world." That's quite a claim.
Mm-hmm. But he didn't have the right to stand in that spot through a false assumption, through mm-hmm. false humility. It was where he knew exactly where he stood and what his responsibilities were, and that's why he was able to react the way he did.
I've been thinking also about the custom in Asian societies of bowing and another custom of kneeling. And I think both of those may possibly be expressions of humility. The act of bowing is so alien to our society, where we keep our heads up and refuse to think of ourselves as beneath anyone. There's a great leveling in modern society that doesn't recognize anyone as being superior of attainment or of intelligence or of talent compared to anyone else. And I think that's pretty unrealistic. But the custom of bowing was discussed by a great Zen master named Shunryu Suzuki, who wrote a classic book on Zen meditation, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And I remembered a passage from it where he was talking about bowing and what it cultivates in the spiritual life. He said, the student bows to the master sometimes. Sometimes the master bows to the student. The husband bows to the wife, and the wife bows to the husband. And he said, sometimes we may even bow to cats and dogs. And that stayed in my mind. I loved that thought, because what he was saying was, you never know who might be your teacher.
Mm. And that's interesting.
I had a cat once who taught me a great deal about the lack of humility, which is a cat. I'm a cat and you're not. Too bad for you, was her attitude. But you never know who will be your teacher. Sometimes we may bow to cats and dogs. Bowing is not a sign of self-abnegation. I don't think it's a recognition of the worth of someone else.
Yeah, that's right. And it's there again, it's based on, as I said before, it's based on fact, on the fact of who one is and who that other person is. And you recognize that there is a spiritual person there that has equal value to yourself and to everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's recognition of that, I think, that's perhaps behind that.
I remember a wonderful story in Alice Bailey's unfinished autobiography, which I would urge our listeners to read if they are interested in the life of a spiritual seeker who made great progress in one lifetime. It's a fascinating story. She told about her early years in India. She was a young British woman of Victorian England and of a very high social class, with all of the limitations that that time and age instilled in her. It was a very rigid view of the world that imprisoned her at that time. And she went to India to be a missionary for the church. And she loved India. And she told about a very simple, humble Indian servant who was devoted to her, and who slept on the mat outside her door every night, who devoted himself to her comfort and well-being. He was a very simple man of no particular status or attainment, but she remarked on his spiritual quality which emanated from him, and she had the presence of mind and character even at that time in her life to recognize the man's spiritual worth, which simply radiated from him. And yet he expected nothing in return, in the sense of recognition or acknowledgement that, yes, he's a very spiritual person. He thought of that not at all. Apparently he was devoted to serving his, what would you call her, his mistress, I don't know what the term would be, and yet she realized his great spiritual status, which is something I suppose you intuitively just sense.
That's, it was good that she could pick up on that, because that's a good example of how a person even of a servant status could be your teacher.
And I think it also says something about Alice's spiritual status. You can't recognize the worth of others if you don't have some of that quality within you. Yeah. You help no one by denigrating and criticizing and downplaying the value of others. But when you can see their worth, their potential, and rejoice in seeing it, you can then be pretty assured that you too are well on your way, if it's really sincere and humbly heartfelt. We shouldn't feel diminished by the greatness of others. We should enjoy basking in their light, as far as I'm concerned.
I think there is a little test that one can take of oneself and to just kind of see where how one reacts to and for example how do you handle a compliment when someone gives you a compliment?
Thank you very
how
much.
Do you handle a compliment? Does it feed your pride, or does
sometimes.
It do you accept it graciously
sometimes,
or with a sense of humility, a right proportion here again,
mm-hmm.
and or with self-depreciation towards a compliment like that? It's how does one react? And I think that can help us determine where we stand in this whole question of humility.
Well, it's a very Buddhist teaching to say that you shouldn't react to compliments or criticism, that neither one of them should turn your head in the slightest. And when we can get to that stage, we're advancing rapidly.
Yeah, well, that there again, it's taking that middle point of view that neither reacts to the extreme of false pride mm-hmm. or false humility. And it's that middle path again.
Humility is also the capacity to express true remorse and regret, I think. Most people are not too good at really rendering an apology in a way that conveys real, true remorse. But I'm thinking of a few years ago when a naval ship of the United States caused an accident that led to the deaths of quite a large number of Japanese. And our ambassador at the time met with the Japanese prime minister and bowed low and deep. And I remember reading that and thinking, good for him, because that was the perfect response in the Japanese society. And there was Willy Brandt, the German chancellor, who visited, I think it was Auschwitz, maybe a couple of decades after the World War. And he went there and made no speeches. He simply knelt. And it's the perfect expression, I think, for something that cannot be met with words. I think that's a sign of humility and of a true sense of proportion of how to respond.
Mm-hmm. Goes back to that saying in the Bible, to walk humbly with thy God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very true, what we all have to kind of hold in our minds all the time to understand what true humility is. And we're talking about true humility, which is based on a vision of where one stands on the path, truly stands on the path.
And in fact, the stage of approaching initiation requires that one goes up the mountaintop of initiation on one's knees, which is interesting. At that advanced stage, one must progress on his knees, so it's an important quality for us all to cultivate.
Yeah. We certainly appreciate the help that you've given us in funding us, sending us donations, and we need more help because every week is a new expense to remain on the radio show, and you've been very good and helped us out, and because of your donations, we've been able to remain on the air. So please continue to send donations. We continue to need your help. Send donations to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, donations can be sent to Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And if you'd like that free general package of information with all that material, just give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-695-8247. NY Lucis, think of 1-866 New York Lucis. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, Let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.